So welcome to Loveridge Podcast. Well, first of all, this is episode, I think it's 50-something. Anyways, awesome guest on the phone. Mike, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Super excited to have you on. I met Mike at a convention down in Acapulco about a month ago. It was at Sasha's Direct Dating Summit on Relationship Mastery. And Mike came in, gave an amazing talk on basically the sexual lifestyle, and we'll get into what that actually means and how it's fun and awesome and all the different ways you can explore your sexuality and test your boundaries and have great sex and so on and so forth. So Mike, welcome to the call. And you want to just give the guys a quick background on who you are and, you know, how you ended up at the Direct Dating Summit and on this call?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on your podcast. So this is awesome. I love hearing myself talk. So, you know, these are always, that's always great to be a guest. I was down in Acapulco because I work with Sasha Daygame. I help him teach classes. I've been doing a lot of Skype calls lately. And I had taken a boot camp with him about 5 years ago after my my divorce. Because I knew how to have and maintain relationships, but I didn't know how to start them. So I learned that on the boot camp and learned how to face my fears with women. And then once I got into the habit of facing fears, I started basically finding as many as I could and rooting them out. And that led me into the realm of non-monogamy, polyamory. And I was down in Acapulco to give a talk about swinging because my partner and I have gotten into it over the last couple of years, and the activity itself, the scene itself, has just been really amazing, really enriching, and has helped us in our relationship grow closer, as well as us as individuals become a lot stronger personally.
Yeah, and I mean, I can speak from personal experience. I was really excited to hear your talk just from my background in swinging. My ex-girlfriend and I got into the swinger scene a few years ago, and I, you know, certainly have a ton of short stories to share from that and a ton of learning experiences and whatnot. And I'm curious, what got you into the scene?
Well, I had... probably HBO, to be honest. probably HBO's real sex series that I was watching unbeknownst to my parents at 2 a.m. when I was like 8. So I've known since before puberty that there are people known as swingers, and there's polyamory, and there's fetishes, and all these kinds of things. And I was always fascinated by it. But I was raised, it wasn't a religious household, but I was still Roman Catholic, and that comes with its own bag of guilt and hang-ups and things like that. So I was on the hardcore monogamy train for, well, I guess until I was 28. I was trying to get married in as few attempts as possible. I was trying to sleep with as few women as possible. I know that sounds so counterintuitive, especially to this audience, I'm sure. But I really didn't believe that non-monogamous people were telling the truth. I thought that they were lying to themselves or lying to their partners, or some lying was going on, that it could not possibly be, you know, as awesome as the concept sounded. And I thought, well, okay, maybe even if it is that awesome, it's not with attractive people that I would want to do any of those things with. Like, they're all ugly people or old aging hippies or whatever else. So I had all these limiting beliefs around it and these negative connotations and everything. But then after I got into pickup and I started, after my divorce, I said, you know what? I've been excellent at monogamy. I've mastered monogamy. It can miss me. It doesn't need me around. Like, it can hang out for a couple of years while I explore this other stuff. But as soon as I started looking into it, it started to make more and more sense. I mean, I read Sex 3.0, I read Opening Up, I listened to a bunch of podcasts, and it just resonated with me. Like, you know, and I'm sure your audience knows, when you hear a truth for the first time, it's like, it strikes a chord almost literally, like something pings inside you. And that's how that kept happening more and more for me as I started researching non-monogamy. And it only took me, about 4 or 5 months after my divorce, I said, you know what, I'm going to do this as a lifestyle and see what comes of it.
Fair.
Oh, did you ask about swinging specifically or about the non-monogamy part? Because the swinging specifically was, because of everything I just said, I had always known about sex clubs. So when I traveled for work, I would look up sex clubs to see if I could go to a sex club, just because I wanted to say I went to a sex club. And it took me a couple years to realize that sex clubs exist to support a swing scene. They don't exist in a vacuum. So when I'm going there on like a Wednesday night at 11 o'clock and it's totally dead, I'm like, oh, sex clubs must suck. But really, it's the once a month or once a week parties that they have where everybody shows up for that are where all the fun happens.
Right, right. And tell me a little bit more about your transition from, you know, you were engaged were you divorced or engaged?
I was divorced.
Divorced, right. Okay, so you're married, divorced, single. Tell me more about your progression from single into swinging. Like, did you make a pit stop in threesome land first? That's what I did, and that led me into swinging. But what about you?
Yeah, I made a pit stop. It wasn't really like, oh, I really like threesomes. Let's do swinging now, because I knew I was going to like threesomes. But it was really what really opened the doors for it in my case was my polyamorous situation. I had my primary relationship, and I don't even like saying primary. I don't say secondary. I say non-primary, primary, non-primary. Even using that distinction, you might know from experience, can get tricky. My non-primary. Yeah.
I'm not the primary.
No, you're the tertiary. I hate that. So when my non-primary relationship ended, that enabled me and my primary partner to bond even closer, because even though we'd been together for years, and even though I'd been telling her like, hey, nobody is a threat to you, I promise, like all that stuff is fine and good to say, but when I'm either saying, okay, honey, it's Tuesday, time for you to go somewhere else so my other girl can come over, or me saying, hey, it's Tuesday, see you tomorrow, I'm going to go sleep at my other girlfriend's house, that's difficult. You know, it's difficult to, sure, to deal, you know. So when that situation ended,
drama.
Yeah. And if I had to do it over again, that wouldn't have been a situation that I maintained, because in retrospect, I realized I was doing some things wrong. But anyway, once it ended, and my relationship became partnered non-monogamy, which had always been the plan. The polyamory detour was kind of accidental almost. At least wasn't planned, but partnered non-monogamy was. So me and my partner are like, okay, it's you and me. We're still going to date other people, but you know, you and me are you and me, and we're tight. When that happened, I said, hey, why don't we check out this sex club? Because now she's feeling more comfortable. Now she's trusting me a lot more. You know, she always trusted me, but trusting me in this realm of like, let's do crazy, sexy stuff together with potentially other people. So I'm like, let's go to the sex club where at least we knew that people could watch us or anything like that. And I pitched it as, hey, it's an adult playground, right? We're going to go. It's probably that I had been to sex clubs before when they were dead. So I was like, well, this will be the first time I'm at one that's packed. So that'll be new for me, but in having gone to them before, I know that you can expect to find this, this, and this. So she was like, sure, let's go, let's check it out. We went, we had a fantastic time. We were invited to future events. And when we first played with another couple and afterwards found that it was just like invigorating and bonding and just purely positive, despite the fact that like halfway through we were like, we gotta go, and just bounce. that really sold it for us. And as you heard in my talk, the atmosphere and the environment, the people that you get to see, we just came back from a 2-day hotel takeover that I used as like part of my birthday celebration. And it was just so great to be around all these people that are like-minded and open-minded and just upfront and direct about everything. I love direct people, hence why I work for Sasha.
I mean, that's in my opinion, actually, that, you know, I was active in the lifestyle community for like a little over a year. And the thing that I think is like the coolest thing are the people, obviously the people you meet, but it's not just people you meet. It's the attitude of the people in the lifestyle. They're super open-minded. They're super direct. They're super cool. They're extremely conscious and aware, able to talk about their emotions and how they're feeling, able to connect with other people. You have to be, because otherwise your relationship will never last or make it. And you spoke to that a lot in your speech. And I think you said something that was really cool, was that it'll bring out everything. And if you don't talk about it, it'll kill you.
Yep. Communicate or die. I mean, my communication skills, I mean, I thought I was pretty freaking good at communicating. And after, you know, 2 years swinging, I'm exponentially better. It just challenges you at a lot of different steps, and not necessarily in a bad way, but I was actually explaining this to somebody yesterday. So one of our friends that we converted, I guess you could say, they were having their maybe third experience, their first hotel takeover. And the husband afterwards said, hey, did you ever have an experience where maybe you didn't feel like you were ready to, you know, for it to happen? And I said, yeah, that's every single time. Because we have no frame of reference for what's going to happen. So you're always going to feel awkward. You're never going to feel like you're totally ready to see something happen, unless of course it's your fantasy and you know that you're turned on by it. But, you know, some crazy shit could happen in the middle of, like, if you listen to the Sasha podcast that he just released with me, I tell a crazy story about how they stole my girlfriend's panties off of her while she was wearing them. And we had not prepared for that. We had prepared to see sex. We had prepared to get hit on. We had not prepared for someone to steal our underwear. So, you know, we had no frame of reference for that. So you're going to be presented with situations that are at least going to be challenging, that might make you feel uncomfortable, that might make you feel awkward. And that's the goal. Like that's good, because then it forces that conversation between you and your partner. And by the end of it, you're going to be that much more bonded and connected, or you'll find out that you're not supposed to be together. And that's fine too, because you just saved yourself a lot of time.
Yeah. And you know, I love what you said about being confronted and being potentially embarrassed or nervous. I feel like if you can do something every day, or at least once a week, where you feel embarrassed, nervous, and potentially awkward, you know you're growing, you know you're pushing your comfort zone. If it's rare that you feel that, you know, sense of embarrassment or awkwardness or nervousness, it means you're really just not, like, playing as hard as you could in life, I feel like. And obviously, you know, pushing your boundaries in a sexual way is one way to do it. It's a great way, because that kind of brings up all your shit. So it can be great from a personal growth standpoint as well.
Yeah, for sure. I feel that way too. I was doing a Skype call with somebody earlier today, and he was saying, oh yeah, you know, I felt amazing after I took the boot camp, and especially on that Sunday, I was talking to all these people, but then I got a girlfriend a week later and I totally lost all momentum. And now he's saying, like, now I can't, you know, I feel awkward in even common situations. I'm like, yeah, you have to continuously challenge yourself. If you, it's a muscle that needs to be exercised. And like right now, I complain sometimes to my girlfriend because I'm like, man, I'm not, I'm trying to be funny when I say this, but I'll say like, oh, I'm not as much of an asshole as I need to be. She's like, what do you mean? Well, you know, if I was out approaching people on the regular, then I would cut that guy in line because he's not paying attention to anything. I would, you know, walk right up to that guy and do this, and I would blah, 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 blah. But where when I'm approaching all the time, I feel invincible doing those sort of things. But when you're out of practice, it's like, oh, they might say something.
Right. Although you start to give a fuck.
Yeah, you start to give a fuck, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Much more fun to not give a fuck, that's for sure. So tell me more about this. Before you got into swinging. It sounded like you had some open relationships and you know, for, like you said, for lack of a better word, a primary, a secondary, tertiary partners. What ended up happening, with your partners at the time and now what does your relationship look like? Obviously with, she's your fiance now or your girlfriend?
Yeah, I proposed to her after Acapulco, actually.
That's right. That's right. Amazing. Cool. Yeah. The day after, right? In the email thread.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I got home that night, I decided to do an engagement necklace and I saw it in the duty free on the way home. And I was like, this will be perfect. This will be, she'll love this. And, and that's what gave me the idea. So I thought of like, what is it that I'm going to say? Wrote like two paragraphs or something. And then I blindfolded her, let her out of the kitchen, played the song I want to use as a wedding song, and then said my thing. And she loved it. It was great. Went better than the first proposal, I'll say that.
That's awesome. Well, congrats on
that. Aw, congrats. That's so sweet.
Thank you. Yeah, it's all about the story. You got to make sure you have a decent story. I didn't know how to beat my former story of proposing on stage at an Atari concert, but I didn't think I needed to mash that same thing this time.
So I guess my question is, what happened? How'd you end up in a relationship with her, when you had your other open relationships going?
Well, so she came first. I split up with my ex, my ex-wife, and like less than immediately after. I knew that I was not going to have. The plan was to not have any serious relationships for a while. Like I was like, I'm getting out of this 8-year relationship, 4 years of which was a marriage. I am only two of those really counted, but I'm going to be single for at least a couple years here. And my plan was, all right, I didn't know pickup at the time, but I knew like online works for, to some degree. So like, oh, I'll meet people online and I'll date them for 3 months. And when they start to catch feelings, they'll be like, no feeling. Let's just be friends. And then have them whore me out to their other girlfriend. That was the original plan. But then I learned pickup and learned about non-monogamy and was like, oh, you can do this shit simultaneously. That I can cover a lot more ground this way. But I had met my future fiance. I had met her like 2 months after after I got separated. And we were hitting it off like right, really quickly, really strongly right away. We spent almost every day of that summer together. And, but I told her, like, hey, this is not an exclusive thing. We can see other people, yada, yada, yada. She's all fine with that. Then now we're dating. It's November. And I'm like, yeah, I've come to the conclusion that non-monogamy is what I need to do as a lifestyle. And if you're not cool with that, then that might mean that we end. So I had to approach her with that the first time. That was rough. Then I was kind of dumb like a year later and I was like, oh, we can be monogamous. And then I had to be like, oh no, we can't be monogamous. So I had to like, close the relationship and then opened it again. That was a bad, also a bonehead move. So I had had all these talks with her. She was she was dealing with it for like a year. She was also really young at the time. So I knew that there might be some issues with self-esteem and things like that. So I was still kind of worried about her leaving. When I say, hey, got to open up the relationship again, she actually does leave. And while she's gone, I start dating this other girl. And I tell this other girl, do not fall in love with me. This should be a summer fling. I'm still in love with my ex, and I'm actively trying to get her back. This is how I started my non-primary relationship with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then my primary comes back like 5-6 months later and she says, hey, I want to do the partner non-monogamy thing with you. I've just gotten done dating a really possessive, jealous asshole and you're non-possessive and non-jealous and not an asshole. So let's give it a try. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. Unfortunately, if you want to come back, it's going to be polyamory now because I have this other girl that I care about and I'm not just going to turn my back on her. So that's how we sort of fell into having two girlfriends. I thought the non-primary was going to bounce. I thought she'd leave. But instead, it just intensified our relationship because we kind of put a time limit on it. She said, I definitely don't want to be somebody's, I don't want to be someone, I don't, how do I say this? She wants to be someone's first priority. She's like, I did not see myself in a loving relationship where I'm not the number one. So she's like, so this has to end eventually. And we knew it was probably going to end. We said, hey, how about we break up at the 2-year anniversary mark? And we were like, great. So we planned out our breakup like a year in advance. But that ended up just intensified all our feelings for each other. So it made the breakup that much more worse. This should be a cautionary tale. People should not look to mirror what I've done here. But during that whole time, I had my primary, my non-primary, and then both of those were open relationships in and of themselves. So I could date other girls, and I traveled a lot for work. So I would tend to make friends when I would travel. I would meet, you know, women online or pick them up on the street or whatever, and then make friends that way. So that was sort of the how it laid out. Swinging wasn't a part of it. Honestly, given everything that I was up to, I probably wouldn't have had the time for it. And then when the current situation, engaged, swinging, and we can see other people if we want. But honestly, when you're in the swing scene, it makes it so easy to have crazy sex with new people that I'm really not motivated to go pick up new girls. Like, why should I? I don't have to. Yeah, I've got a bunch of sexy hotties that are, you know.
Totally.
It sort of settled into, after maybe 4 or so years of experimenting with the non-monogamy thing, we're kind of hitting our stride now. Like, we really feel like we're in our groove as far as what the non-monogamy adds to our relationship and what are the things that we have to do maybe differently than monogamous people, which really turns into being just a whole lot more processing.
Gotcha. So right now, if I could take a guess, I'm just curious. Your current lifestyle consists of going to takeovers, going to different events. Do you still see random girls on the side, or do you mostly just play in the, you know, lifestyle sort of events or with your girlfriend or with your fiance? I mean, and does she see other guys? And sorry if I'm meddling too much in the relationship, but it's interesting.
No, I'm kind of an open book about this stuff.
Yeah.
She hasn't seen, at least to my knowledge. I also like to challenge myself with going as long as I can without asking, or rather, not really without asking, but without giving a shit. You know, we don't have a don't ask, don't tell policy. We have a don't advertise, don't worry policy. She doesn't really like hearing about any of my adventures. I do like hearing about it. So like I'll challenge myself to not ask, but then I'll ask and then I'll be like, okay, fill me in on everything. But I don't think she has seen anybody. I'm pretty sure she hasn't. She's just more strapped for time. She works a 9-to-5. She's got a 2-hour commute. So not really a lot of, even if she met somebody, she had like not a lot of opportunity to hang out with them. I've got much more of a free schedule. So if I meet somebody, then I'll pursue that if I think something's there. But I'm really sort of sticking with my my existing sort of fuck buddies. So I have a handful of fuck buddies in the state. I've got friends when I travel. So I definitely see those people whenever I get the opportunity. And really, that's just a matter of our schedules lining up. But I've got my OKCupid on for what I like to call passive income. So that tends to get me at least a couple hits, you know, through every few months or so.
And do you guys live together? How often do you see each other?
Yeah, we live together.
Okay. So how do you deal with those situations where you're both in town and you want to go play or she wants to go play? Do you usually just do that together and save most of the other stuff for when one of you guys are out of town?
Yeah, that's how it worked, especially when I was traveling a lot for work. So when I would travel, I would go hang out with whoever I met or whatever, and that's when she would see whoever else she was seeing. And we still that's still sort of the theme that I'm maintaining. When I meet a new girl and she's, you know, I'm like, okay, so did you read my profile? You see the part about non-monogamy. You see that I have an existing relationship. Great, great, great. You're down with all that. Great. Okay. Also, I'm only available from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Is that cool?
Yeah.
So I have like a high degree of a lot of hoops that people have to jump through. So it's really for me, if the new girl not only has to be cool and accepting of, you know, my lifestyle and everything, but she also has to have the same schedule as me or the ability to see me during the day. Because I honestly, my primary is my primary for a reason. I love being around her. When she's around, I want to be with her. I only am with other people when she's not around. Or, you know, I get the novelty itch. I get the itch every once in a while. And I always find it grounding whenever I sleep with somebody else. It always sends me running like right back to my partner, because just it resets that sort of, it resets that switch, you know? It's like,
It's like when, I've had that experience too many times. Exactly. It's like you remember why they're your primary, because they're the best most of the time. And it's also just different. You experience new energy. It allows you to miss that other person. It's hard to remember how good something is until you have something else. Like, the stupid analogy, if you have strawberries every day, right? And then you have a few blueberries, then you go back like, wow, these strawberries are amazing. I forgot how good they taste.
Yes, yes. I use the same analogy, but with ice cream. I love ice cream. I love feminine energy. I love being around women. I love meeting women, talking to them, hanging out. Honestly, some days, this is going to sound awful. With some of my relationships, I fuck them so they'll let me cuddle them. Right? I fuck them and get them off so they'll lay still enough for me to just cuddle like as if I were a stuffed animal. I'm throwing my leg over, I'm laying all over, using their boobs as pillows, fluffing them before I lay my head down. Like I would, with my friends, I'd rather do a lot of that, sometimes more, than the actual sex part. But these are also, I'm talking about relationships that have lasted for years, so we're sort of on that level. If it's a new girl, I'm going to be like everybody else.
Sure. So you've had some of the women you see regularly, you've been seeing for a long time, years, you said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really cool. And one thing for everyone listening to the call, something that I preach all the time, it's like, if you're just honest and open about who you are, what you want, what you do, you're way more likely to get it than if you have to bullshit around and sneak and lie and cheat, and you always get caught. Women are too smart for that. And it's crazy, but I think the majority of women are down to try, and they're open to any sort of situation imaginable. I mean, look at the book 50 Shades of Grey. You know, it's not a national bestseller and crazy movie and all that shit because they're not interested in it, right? So there's evidence for people right there. So one thing you mentioned in your speech, I actually missed this part, which sucked. So I wanted to ask you here. You spoke about ways to kind of, I think, get your monogamous girlfriend, you know, how to have that talk to open her up to some sort of non-monogamy. Can you go over that for the guys on the call? And for me too, obviously. I'd love to hear it.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Like, basically, part of the thing that I focused on in the talk is that the swing scene is, a lot of the benefits of the swing scene can still be felt by monogamous couples. So being in the atmosphere, meeting those people, the people watching, the shared new experience, the novelty of it, the also the anxiety or the adrenaline or the rush that you're going to get, like you're going to feel all those feelings together with your partner, and you're going to think of it as like going to an amusement park together, except sex is the amusement instead of rides. And, you know, if you have a good relationship, any sort of adventure is going to bond you closer together. But you're also going to be having this adventure in an atmosphere that allows your partner and yourself to be way sexier than you could normally be in public. Because if you're acting the way that you're free to act at a swing party at a regular club, people are either going to say shit to you, or they're going to hit on your girl really too hard, or, you know, or maybe you'll get yourself thrown out of the club. So that benefits the monogamous couples, because I'm sure they don't, because I was a monogamous couple. They don't have access to that sort of thing until you're at the swing event. But nobody is going to say that you have to participate or that you have to hook up with anybody. That's not how it goes. So you can tell your monogamous partner, hey, why don't we go and check it out for these reasons, for these benefits? It'll be people watching. It'll be an adventure. It'll be shared. We'll be, you know, at the end of it, even if we get terrified, we'll at least have this crazy story that we can tell people about the time we went to the swinger party or whatever. So that's one way of approaching your partner with it. If you're looking to maintain the monogamy, then that's a very, very true thing to say to her. You're like, hey, we can still have fun. I don't want to be with anybody else. I don't want to hook up with anybody else. I don't want you hooking up with anybody else. But you and me can still go and have a great time. So that's one way of at least getting yourself there. And then the joke that I heard, where did I hear it? I can't remember where I heard it, but I tell this joke all the time now, which is it takes a man 3 hours to convince his wife to go to her first swing event. And then it takes him 3 hours to convince her to leave.
And
it's because once the woman gets there, what you said about them, a lot of them being willing, I believe that. I believe that with a lot of people, I think that they would go for non-monogamy if they believed that they weren't going to get in trouble for it, or that there, you know, that there wasn't anything to fear. I think it's not really based. I think most of the people that don't do it is because they have a fear, not because they have a preference, right? If somebody tells me, oh, you know what? I was non-monogamous for a little while, and, you know, it's a lot of overhead, it's a lot of talking, it's a lot of, you know, this, that, or the other thing, I prefer monogamy. Then I say, great, you prefer monogamy, you're a monogamous person, fantastic. But the people that have been monogamous their entire lives and never experimented with something else, at least, and by the way, cheating on your girlfriend is not non-monogamy. I mean, it's non-monogamy, but it's not like this. It's not a comparable experience. But yeah, if you get that fear out of the way, then I feel a lot more people would be interested. And the ways that you can remove that fear is either by some firsthand experience or, you know, knowing how to pitch things pretty well. So you approach your monogamous partner. If she acquiesces, if she gets to the thing, she can be excited. If she's into sex, if you have a partner that's at least into sex, she loves sex, she's open to all those sort of things, then she's at least going to be intrigued by the idea of going to such a sexual environment, and depending on what venue you choose, a voyeuristic environment where you can actually watch people. I thought I was going to have to go to Amsterdam to watch a live sex show, and now I see one basically every week. Now, if you're hoping to get your monogamous partner into the swing team, again, I would say, first off, there's various types of events. One of them is called a meet and greet, where it's simply that. Everybody there is a swinger, but there's no sex on premises. There might be some nudity, depending, like they might have a wet t-shirt contest or whatever. But for the most part, you're not going to have to see intense action. You're not going to be propositioned for intense action. And it's a great environment to just, well, get a taste of the environment, a great spot to just be like, oh, wow, this is really laid back. People are really direct. I didn't know I could flirt like that here, and that would be okay. It's a good initial first taste of what the scene would be like. If you're a little more adventurous and you want it, and you think like, you know what, I think she's a bit of a voyeur, or she's an exhibitionist, maybe then you go to the sex club and you say, again, honey, we're not going to touch anybody else. We're not going to do whatever. It's just going to be you and me. So for that first taste, you can judge how she reacts. But I think probably the best environment for the most fun environment for both kinds, for monogamous couples, and this is also my preference, are the hotel takeovers, because you get your own room that you can always run back to and take a break, process things, make a new drink, you know, whatever. So if you're approaching it as a, hey, we're going to go and people watch, we're going to go and dip our toes in and see what we see, I think that gives you the best ability to participate or not participate at one of those. And it's a lot of, I heard a lot of stories where people are like, you know, we went without any expectations and we ended up having a six of them. We went and we didn't think we were going to be comfortable with full swap. And then that's exactly what happened. So if you want to give yourself that freedom or sort of like the best chance of having anything happen, then I would recommend the hotel party.
Gotcha.